Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freundo, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language, and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com. Listen.
Welcome to Nintendo Voice Chat episode 482. I'm your host for this week, Zachary Ryan, and today I'm joined by a special group of friends, starting with Sam Claiborne.
Second billing.
Brian Altano.
Third billing.
And Jonathan Dornbush.
Last billing.
Aw, dang.
Wait,
we still love you, bud.
Is the announcer first billing?
I don't know. I didn't. I
think we're actually 1, 2, 3.
Ooh.
And special guest, Zach Ryan.
It's me. I haven't hosted in a while. I grew this mustache to show that time has passed. And also, I want it to look like Sam, because we're buds. Thank you. Thank you. That's a joke I made for the first time just now.
I see there's an apology written into this.
Well, wait. We're not there yet. Sam's already taken us off the rails.
Well, I just wanted an apology from Jonathan for that clearly insincere laugh.
That won't be the last, that certainly wasn't the first. This week on the show, it is, in fact, a slow news week, so we're going to talk. We're going to take a bunch of your listener questions, an extra special long edition of the question block, but we're also going to talk about some news that happened this week. There was a few news stories that we wanted to cover, and we're going to tell you a little bit about what we're playing, although you can probably take a guess.
Also, worth mentioning, Casey cannot be here this week because she is busy playing a top secret video game.
That's right.
You guess what it is?
Nobody can possibly know.
Knack 3.
We're going to start off with a series of corrections and apologies because we're bad at this. First of all, you can locally transfer save data that doesn't support cloud data, like for Splatoon or Pokemon. You just need both Nintendo Switch consoles next to each other, and it does not require an internet connection. This deletes the save data off the original Switch.
Did you guys goof that up last week?
Yeah, we did. You know who did it? Pear.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, the general manager himself.
You dolt.
He thought he knew everything about the Nintendo Switch, but guess what he didn't know? Whatever that was.
I just did this with my Let's Go Eevee save file a couple weeks ago, so I would have been there. I know.
Yeah. I'm trying to parse this. You can locally transfer save data that doesn't support... So that means that...
Hey, you know what, buddy? Doesn't matter. It's in the past now. We've apologized for it. We're moving right along. Also, we got new chairs here that don't have wheels, so we won't be bumping the microphones constantly.
Is that what's different?
People were talking about that last week in the show.
Also, he has a mustache. That's also different.
It's the third thing to apologize for.
Also,
but
I lost my German accent.
Yeah. You do look like a young pair. But Jonathan, you had an extra special apology
quite the intro.
Thank you. That you wanted to address right off the top here.
I do. If I could begin. On Wednesday, October 30th, Tom Marks sent me a photo of himself in Hawaii and said, along with that photo, "I deleted Slack. Please post this in the NVC group. Ha 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 ha." On Wednesday, October 30th, I was also homesick and thus a little loopy on meds. So when he sent me that photo, I read the word group, and because I've been such a part of the group for so long, I thought he meant the Nintendo Voice Chat Facebook group, even though he used the word Slack in there, which is what we use to communicate in the office. So, not thinking another thing about what he sent me, I immediately saved that photo and posted it to the Facebook group. The Facebook group has then turned it into one of the best memes I've ever seen.
It's one of the hottest memes
like
of
more than
2019.
Excuse than an apology.
It's an excuse. I'm not apologizing. It's great.
It has resulted in some like just 10 out of 10 Tom Marks memes.
Yeah.
And then last week, Pear called him his little bow tie man, which I thought was very good also. Uh-huh. So Tom, even though he hasn't been on the show, he will be back next week, has been having a real adventure in his off time.
Yeah, I wanted to set the record straight because on that feed, I commented, Tom is going to be so mad at me. Tom is not mad as far as he has told me. I'll let him speak his
Tom's,
side of this.
Tom's probably overjoyed that he's become such a hot meme in the Nintendo Voice Chat podcast forums.
It's the coolest meme I've seen in a while.
Well, thank you for that half apology.
Right, so it's a picture of Tom in Hawaii. That's it.
He's on the beach.
Looking scared.
Yeah, he's like yelling kind of at the camera. There's another person in the background running toward the ocean. People have turned it basically into the ocean being a good thing, people running toward that ocean good thing, mm-hmm. and then Tom being the bad thing yelling.
He looks like he was airdropped into vacation against his will.
Right.
Yeah.
Like he's like,
I think he's mostly afraid of just being outside for that long.
Yeah.
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 Also,
gamers,
no bow tie, which was alarming.
Startling. Mm-hmm.
So. Well, Jonathan, thank you for that. We should move on and talk about some of the news that happened this week.
No, I think this is good.
Okay, cool. So anyway, Tom's face, right? So the first thing that we wanted to talk about was some big Smash updates, starting with Terry Bogard, who is available today as of this recording, tomorrow if you're listening to it, or yesterday if you're listening to it. Terry was added as part of Challenger Pack 4. Which also adds 50 SNK tunes.
Doesn't that bring the number of tunes in the game to like over 1,500?
It's ridiculous. Like yeah, it's some crazy amount of
music. How many of these can you guys name?
What, tunes?
Oh, the Terry tunes?
Songs from SNK.
Well, there's Terry's theme.
Yeah, there's
Terry's theme B.
Uh-huh.
Fatal Fury theme.
Fatal Fury theme.
Ending.
Terry's
ending
death theme. Knell.
That's good.
Fatal Fury main
title,
menu.
Title screen. No, we're kidding. He's a tremendously popular character, just not with us personally.
Right.
What does SNK stand for?
Super Nunchuck Knights.
Knockin' Boots.
Super Knockin' Boots. That's a deep cut.
It's also wrong.
I haven't had an opportunity to... you're right.
The silent K of Boots.
Yeah. I haven't had an opportunity to play, but apparently he plays very similar to Ryu and Ken, which is nice.
Mitchell Saltzman of IGN.com has said on Twitter, first impression of Terry, ooh boy, he is fun, with a lot of N's at the end. Second impression... Second impression, are you okay? Bust a wolf. And then a follow-up, yeah, I think Terry might be my new main.
Okay, so apparently that means that he's good?
Yeah.
Question mark?
Or cheap.
We'll give him a shot. Smash Brothers is a game that I like to revisit every so often when they put new characters and play for about 3 days, and then be like, I'm still bad at this.
Yeah.
But it's still a lot of fun. Toon Link. I like Toon Link or Young Link.
Nice.
Yeah. But I haven't played in a while. I got to go back to it and see what's up with Terry and see about these new Ryu Ken moves.
Check out his Bogards.
Is Wind Waker still your favorite game of all time?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
So Sakurai did this like 40-minute presentation about Terry's moveset and all the new stuff coming to Smash, but mostly people are upset because another popular Final Fight character named Mai is not being included. And he said, and I quote, Super Smash Brothers Ultimate is for good boys and girls of many different ages, so we decided not to feature her because she is a buxom fighter, and they think maybe it's a little risky, but, you know, everybody's point is like, well, Bayonetta's in the game, and so-and-so is in the game. Zero
Donkey
Suit Samus.
Kong's in the game.
Donkey Kong.
Wario is a buxom fella.
Somebody's crush, probably. But
Mario Land's Barrett's bad boy.
Yeah. But ultimately, like, I think this is so funny because it's like, it's so little about, like, that was clearly a joke on his part, and it was just the fact that they chose one character from this universe to put in there. It has nothing to do with, like, her being too hot for the game or
Why
something.
Why didn't they just draw clothes or whatever?
Because she,
there would be outrage.
Legally, as a character standards, they don't cover up the boobs. So, yeah.
What's the what's the deal with the for good boys and girls? Is that a translation that like somebody did?
I think he's just insinuating that the game is like PG rated, and she's
But is that a translation that somebody like? Is that
that's from the stream? Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the
really.
Stream
yeah, that's their official translation.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a weird
it's
one.
For good boys and girls and players of all ages.
Nintendo 2019.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because when I hear good boys and girls, I think dogs.
Like like pets?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fair.
And I'm just wondering if he, like, can't, no.
I would pay
Smash Brothers. Can a dog play any game?
I would pay human money to watch a dog play Smash Brothers. I think
I wouldn't
be good.
Pay dog money for anything
because
that's illegal.
I bet a dog could play Smash Brothers easily because it's a casual party game for babies.
No,
just kidding. That's a joke. It's not real. I love you all.
Just
keep
like Mr. Sakurai.
Do you mean
made
for puppies?
For puppies.
But bigger Smash news to me anyway is that Super Smash Ultimate is now the best-selling fighting game of all time. 15.7 million units sold. Beating Street Fighter 2 at 15.5 million units, which is a record that game has held forever.
Mm-hmm.
So this is pretty momentous that Smash has surpassed it. And it's also become the best-selling fighting series of all time with 53.03 million units sold, 11 million of those in its first week.
There's also only one version of Smash Ultimate, and there are 2,000 versions of Street Fighter 2.
Correct.
So this is a big deal.
Yeah.
I like thinking like somebody was like, okay, we're going to add in all the Street Fighter 2 cabinets.
Yeah.
And then the Game Boy game.
Oh, like, yeah.
Did this really add up to I'm in disbelief. Like, it's been out on every system ever. And that first run, like, there was games that sold more than 15 million copies in 1991 and 2. I'm just surprised that it wouldn't have.
Yeah.
So,
game in the world.
The quote here from Nintendo is, in comparison, total sales for Tekken, this quote might not be from Nintendo, I'm sorry. But in comparison, total sales for Tekken, Dragon Ball, Street Fighter, and Mortal Kombat are all between 45 million to 47 million. So Smash has handily beaten all of those franchises, which is pretty impressive.
In total, right?
Correct.
Franchise
yes.
total?
Yeah.
I bought
Mortal Kombat 4 or 5 times. Because I had it on Game Gear, Genesis, definitely Super Nintendo because it was cool and had sweat. And then maybe on the trilogy later on 64.
Yep.
So
yeah.
I bought Mortal Kombat Trilogy.
I've bought a lot of Street Fighter games multiple times.
It's weird,
yeah.
right?
Including the most recent collection on Switch, which is very good.
You know, the game was so popular in arcades that there's also just versions of the arcade game called Rainbow, which is just a term that Street Fighter Rainbow, that applies to all these game boards that are just illegally made and modified. So they'd put like different characters in them and stuff like that. But then they just go to the arcade machine, just like put this thing in. And then you'd go to the arcade one day and you're, you know, all the characters have Moon Gravity, like Game Genie or something like that.
When can we look forward to Super Smash Brothers Rainbow?
And I bet those numbers aren't in here.
Definitely not. No.
Smash Brothers Rainbow would be really cool. It's basically mods before mods. That's what Ms. Pac-Man is, too. It's just a mod of Pac-Man that was licensed.
That's super cool. Mm-hmm. Speaking of mods, Toby Fox of Undertale fame. It's no real sequitur there. Yeah. He's written a tune for his Pokemon Sword and Shield that he announced via Twitter with a cute Undertale-style sketch of Eevee. It's not the main theme, but it's probably a pretty good tune because the music in Undertale is very good. Jonathan, you're an Undertale boy, right?
I enjoy it. I'm not Barrett level.
No, nobody is Barrett level.
Barrett was like crying at 3 a.m. after he beat it once.
Yeah, yeah.
But
it's Miranda Sanchez's favorite game of all time.
That's true.
It's got some great music in it. So,
it does.
Yeah, and obviously Game Freak loves him, having worked with him on Little Town Hero.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, he's popping up a lot lately.
Yeah.
He's doing a lot of cool stuff, Mr. Fox.
And he's also working on his own stuff. So
yeah.
It's cool that he's taking this time to be part of the larger community that does love his games and his music.
Yeah, totally. And I think it's nice that Nintendo recognizes some like more contemporary modern composers and stuff, you know, like wants to introduce new kind of soundscapes and songs and stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's very cool. Now to a topic that all of our viewers and fans are very excited to hear more about. It's Pokemon.
Right.
Yeah.
And who better to break it down than the four biggest Pokemon experts at IG?
Okay, I really like Pokemon.
No, I know.
I'm nowhere near as big into it as...
Oh, you're into Pokemon? Brandon, name three Pokemon.
Charizard?
Agumon.
Uh-huh.
You've already
lost. So it's bad news for Pokemon. It's bad news for Pokemon fans out there because... hot dog, there's a lot of leaks happening right now.
Yeah, there's a lot.
The game is out there in the wild somehow, and people are ripping versions of the game and posting screenshots and videos and stuff.
Do you know
if
the Switch is cracked enough to play like early games now? Like, I know the DS.
I mean, if it's
like
a retail copy, it should work.
Early, and you could just play a bunch of... I'm just saying, like, can you just like bootleg Switch games now?
I actually don't know. Yeah. Like, if there are like ISOs you can download.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
You have to have like a reader for like that little disc.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine you could essentially trick your SD card into reading a game file, but that's probably for people who are locked to a specific firmware and are terrified of upgrading.
Yeah, so there's no indication that a bunch of people are playing this. It's that there's actual physical copies of the game that maybe are at mom and pop stores that are out there. Mm-hmm. That's just the only other way things leak.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but regardless of how these images and these videos and stuff are getting out there, Reset Era and Pokemon subreddits are absolutely swarming with these leaks, and people that are, you know, diehard Pokemon fans are really upset about the idea that they're getting spoiled on things like overall size of the Galar region Pokédex, a full list of Gen 8 Pokemon, Gigantamax
forms,
Galarian forms, and a seemingly comprehensible list of Pokemon included in that Pokédex, including the returning Pokemon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like that total count that is leaked is smaller than the total number of Pokemon in the world.
Right.
So it's like, does that mean that they're just, you can't catch them all anymore?
Well, so that's been the controversy for months, is that they've omitted some of, like, every other Pokemon game has been pretty comprehensive in terms of the number of Pokemon that are included, to my knowledge.
Well, it's that you could always
bring
them from your previous games into your new game. And, the data that they're seeing is saying, like, oh, well, you know, even if you had, like, a bank option, which is, like, coming next year, then you still wouldn't be able to put them all in the game, which is, like, stressful to people.
Yeah, a lot of people are sort of, like, control-effing their favorite slightly more deep cut or even surface level Pokemon and not finding them. Yeah, they're calling this Dexit. Get it?
Because of Pokedex.
That's really cute.
It is.
And it does take place in their version of the UK.
Yeah. It works on two levels.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's right.
I've always played Pokemon, you know, very casually. I've played a lot of the games, but not all of them, and I've caught the ones that are readily available. You know, I'm not one who's transferred Pokemon through the banks through games.
So
this
is a lot of Pidgeys.
Tons of Pidgeys. So this is not a huge deal breaker for me, but also, like, you know, we'll talk about Pokemon a little bit later in the show. But
when I was a kid, people tried to beat Final Fantasy 1 with four white mages, and I think it'd be really cool to beat Pokemon Red, Blue, or Yellow, or Green with four or six Pidgeys.
I think you could probably do it.
Six level 99 Pidgeys.
I believe in them.
I'm completely sympathetic to the people who are not getting their favorite Pokemon.
Yeah, absolutely.
The hardcore players out there who have grown to expect that. That being said, this is a roster that has gotten so insanely big that something had to give at some point. And so maybe this is the year they rip Band-Aid off, and then they'll slowly build back up.
Well, they've said in past interviews that if Pokemon are not included in this game, that doesn't mean they won't. Like, they're forgetting them for the rest of the time.
Right.
They are taking into account who they're not including now as Pokemon to include in future installations.
Yeah. I think it's just interesting to think about, like, all the hundreds and potentially thousands of Pokemon out there. Every Pokemon is somebody's favorite.
Right.
And so it is disappointing to, you know, probably a small subsect of people, but, you know, their favorite weird Pokemon is not in the game, and that's a bummer.
It's also kind of antithetical to the thing we talked about earlier with Smash Brothers, which is this game that championed itself for being everyone who had ever been in that franchise was back for this iteration. And they were like, everyone is here. And then Pokemon, they're like, some of them are here.
Yeah.
Well, and to find out, obviously none of it's confirmed officially by Nintendo or the Pokemon company, but just finding out whether or not your favorite Pokemon's in there by maybe a very blurry screenshot someone posted on a Reddit or Twitter is also not the best, like, emotional way to have to deal with that. And there are, as someone who has seen a lot of leaks, whether they're true or not, they're all over the place on Twitter, especially.
Yeah.
I've seen stuff just pop in my feed constantly.
You know, I'm trying to stay away from spoilies here for our audience, but, you know, regardless of whether or not I play this game, I am a big fan of Grookey. And oh boy, those evolutions are truly something else. It is weird.
Stay safe out there. Watch out for spoilers.
Yeah, if you're worried about Pokemon spoilers, you know, the game comes out next Friday, so maybe just steer clear of where you think you might find those.
I just want to point out, too, we have like a strict no spoiler policy on IGN, and you will not encounter them. In fact, we put up a PSA for how to avoid Pokemon spoilers
instead
of just publishing them. And so you don't need to worry about going to us or our social feeds. We're not going to do any of that.
True. Okay, last bit of news here. Oh, I should also say that regardless of the amount of spoilers, Nintendo has not commented or confirmed or denied any of these spoilers. So, shocking.
Fake.
Shocking news from Nintendo. Last bit of news here before we move on is that Bloodstained Ritual of the Night is finally playable on the Switch, knock on wood.
That's a joke because it's like just, it doesn't run well.
Well, so it didn't for years, or for years, for months. Years. Yeah,
I played it on Switch, but like it just like, you know.
So version 1.03 update addresses frame rate and optimization issues, and the things that it improves are input lag has been eliminated throughout the game, controls are more responsive, visual quality has been improved so things look much more clear and have more detail, and load times are reduced by 70%, which is insane.
That's huge.
That's amazing.
And there are still further updates to come from this team, which I think is really impressive. But I wanted to... This is like... In the hierarchy of Nintendo news this week, I feel like it's pretty small.
I highly recommend this game, though.
That's what I was going to say. Like, I wanted to.
And now you know, you're going to actually play this game. Like, it's totally worth playing on Switch now.
But I downloaded the patch, actually.
Yeah? Have you had an opportunity to play it?
It dropped on Halloween. Yeah. I did.
Just in time for the spooky night.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Well, it was weird because I was just like, Luigi. But the...
We'll get there.
The game is, like, much smoother, and there's less of that sort of, like... One of the big issues I had with it was that kind of hiccup that happened when you jump between screens, which is what you have to do constantly in this game because that's the way it's laid out.
Mm-hmm.
It's still like kind of sluggish, but that is just the way this game is across all platforms.
Yeah.
Like it's not really like the speediest, snappiest Castlevania game. And so they improved the frame rate and the load times and stuff like that. But still, I still find player movement in this game to be like a little bit of a drag.
Yeah,
it definitely is. And I played on a PS4 Pro, and that
me too.
Even still felt slow.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And there's bosses in the PS4 version, even on a Pro, that chug.
Yeah.
That being said, this is one of my probably top five favorite games of the year. I'm a big Castlevania, Metroidvania fan, and this game is so good. And I'm glad that it's finally in a state now where people can pick it up and at least not get a headache trying to play it.
Yeah, and they were waiting to do a really big patch. Like, they even had made an announcement a few weeks or months back. Time is irrelevant anymore.
A few years.
But it might be. They were like, hey, we're not going to just do incremental updates and fixes because we want the game to be the fully polished version that it should be, and we want that all at once for the audience. So
can I ask you guys a question?
No.
Okay.
It's not even question block yet.
No. Actually, that was the question. You said no, so you passed. No, the thing that we see a lot with Switch games is that obviously it's less powerful system.
Yes.
And so it's not always the best performing version at launch. And so to circumvent that, a lot of publishers delay the Switch game until it's ready.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like in this case, that might have been a bit better scenario. But like, what do you guys think? Do you think it's better to...
Well, it's weird too, because Bloodstained was delayed so long.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. And so that's the thing is, I think, you know, when you're looking at a game like Doom, Eternal, or The Outer Worlds, where you're looking at like AA or AAA development that they have a scheduled release date for PC, Xbox, PS4, and then like coming soon to Switch, is a different story than when an indie developer has a Kickstarter that they have like a drop dead date,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's like, hey, this game will be out, and if you've paid the $40 or whatever to get a code, you should, for all intents and purposes, get that code on the same day as every other person that paid that amount of money.
Right, especially because a lot of those codes were supposed to go to a Wii U.
Right, and that's the other thing that I was going to say, was that this game was delayed from the Wii U to the Switch, so this is actually a port of that version, which makes it even more complicated and an even lengthier wait. So I totally understand them trying to put the game out to at least be there in the same time frame as the other consoles. But I will say that, like, regardless of whether or not the Switch version sucked at launch, they've done a tremendous job of at least making this patch get the game to a place where it's playable and at least comparable or competitive against the other versions.
No, I'm totally with you. I'm worried about scenarios where publishers drop a game on Switch day and date as the other ones that doesn't run as well, and then kind of just go, well, F you, got my money, No need to patch this.
I think they should hold all games until the Switch version's ready, just like all the others. I love being able to have the choice to run a great Switch game at launch. I mean, that's the advantage of that system.
Yep.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about whether or not we would play a game on the Switch if it's available on another console in 4K or whatever. And this is an interesting sort of turn on that idea, I think. Yeah.
It's funny, I'm getting to the point where it's like, I don't care about game delays unless it's Zelda or Mario or Animal Crossing or something.
Yeah.
Like my core like favorite games, which I look forward to and read about and like obsess over. But like a lot of games, I'm like, okay, that'll probably be really good when it comes out now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've become a lot more sensible about that. But Zelda, I get so mad.
Well, it's because every Zelda is always delayed like for a year or more.
Yeah, it breaks my heart when that happens.
Yeah. Speaking of console ports and versions, let's talk a little bit about what we've been playing lately. And I'll start off there on the far end with Mr. Dornbush.
I've been playing games a lot relevant to other platforms mm-hmm. for reasons of big launches.
Sure.
But other than those,
we're winking at each other for the audio version.
Yeah,
audio
playing Death Stranding now.
Yeah, okay.
I'm sure in Halo Infinite. But anyway, I've been playing for the last...
You had that ready. It was like a nice soft pitch.
It's a great game. Let me tell you. I won't break embargo. But no, I've been playing a lot of Luigi's Mansion 3.
Hell yeah.
I've been playing fully in co-op except for that first like 20 minutes with my girlfriend. We've just been playing each night, like clearing a floor or two and making sure we can get as much as humanly possible out of that game.
That's really cool. I wanted to ask you, because I know you've been playing it in co-op.
Yeah.
What's it like to have a girlfriend?
Oh, well, it's great.
Just kidding.
The loner.
I had girlfriends before.
I'm just kidding.
Back when Luigi's Mansion came to GameCube.
Oh, yeah. Sick burn.
Who's Luigi?
Luigi? Who is Luigi?
In the couple dynamic that you have.
I'm Luigi.
Okay.
You don't have to answer that.
That's cool. I'm the Luigi of the relationship.
I'm the Luigi.
Wow.
Cool. I mean, it's easy for me. If stuff gets tough, I can just like go back into the little pod and let her deal with everything. Mm-hmm. So it's fine. But no, it's a lot of fun in co-op. It's definitely a game where it's very clearly built to be played and be fun as a single player game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I think co-op makes some stuff definitely a little easier.
Sure.
But it's really fun. And they're even in co-op, and there are smart ways that the game allows both players to still be involved while giving each player their own thing to do, like for when Luigi can slide through a grate or go somewhere else where Luigi can't.
Mm-hmm.
The two of you are usually kept on camera together, so she can be clearing out a room where I'm underneath the room clearing things.
I just had a realization that there was a room that I couldn't figure out, and it's because Luigi can go through a grate.
Yep, yeah,
I hadn't even considered, of course, yeah.
So there's puzzles. Oh, no, you can still control Luigi.
Just have to let things go.
It's funny because, like, the first, I'd say, 4 or 5 floors before you get Luigi, the game is, like, very straightforward, and you're just, like, busting ghosts.
Yeah.
And then once Luigi is brought into the picture, it becomes much, like, incrementally more puzzly as you get through the levels. Yeah. And so last night I did it was the E3 demo level where you fight the night ghost.
Yeah,
and
we were just playing that too.
Dude, that game is amazing. Mm-hmm. I'm really, really enjoying it. And I really love the other Luigi's Mansion games.
Yeah.
But this one feels like the perfect amalgamation of the other two.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's so great. It's so funny and weird. And like,
it looks like it might be in the Odyssey engine. When you see it here in the office, like, it just like it, and I haven't played it, but I've been watching it a lot. It has this like sheen of quality that's so cool to see Nintendo using their own tools to make their own graphics. It's incredible to see that right now.
And it's a game that opens with Toad driving a bus, and he's just got his little Toad knuckles and his little eyes. It's so funny.
I love it.
Yeah, I really am. I'm really enjoying the humor. I'm really loving playing that game.
Mario and Peach have separate hotel rooms.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's been a big controversy.
Some questions about that.
Yeah. I thought that was odd.
Just throwing that out there.
If you collect some of the documents left around the hotel, you'll find information about
the room. You're a liar.
You remember what happened at the wedding. So.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, she called it off.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm enjoying that game so much. The first Luigi's Mansion, like you said, it's... I think a great amalgamation of the two because the first I think is better than the second because it had a really great sense of space.
See, I like the second better.
For me, I just like you get so familiar with the mansion in the first game that like for me a really really great level design does it for me. And in two, I felt like I was just moving through places often enough that I didn't really get to like enjoy the space.
And three does this awesome thing where it allows you to open up different paths and loop back around to areas, kind of like Dark Souls, where you'll like you'll find alternate routes through floors and stuff that that take you back to the elevators that you need to get, you know, up and down. Like,
I really love
it's
that.
It's really smart and really funny.
The idea of like revisiting floors with new tech and getting a bunch of stuff that you missed last time is just perfect. If you had told me when the GameCube launched that this would be a franchise we'd be talking about 20 years later or whatever, I would not believe it. Especially considering the last game I sold, I think sold like 5 million units.
Yeah.
And this one's going to do really well too.
They mentioned that to us at E3 when we were doing like the first hands-on during the pre-brief. And it was one of those things where everyone was like, they even went, so you might be wondering why we're doing another Luigi's Mansion. I'm like, well, the last one sold this many copies.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, this is a bigger thing than I think a lot of people consider it.
Because it was kind of a black sheep of the GameCube launch to be like, oh, you don't have a Mario game? You have a Luigi game and he's scared the whole time and he can't jump and he whistles and cries. I'm like, okay.
All right, that's weird.
Weird system. And it's purple and it has a handle. Mini discs. What's going on, guys?
You playing anything else?
Switch-wise, no, not at the moment. I was just still chipping away at old Picross puzzles I still have left to do.
Sure.
But, yeah.
Yeah. I'm still on the Dragon Quest train. I'm getting to it's getting to be that special time of year where I'm juggling, like, multiple games.
Yeah.
And usually I try to finish one game before I move on to the next thing, and now it's getting to a point where it's impossible. So, right now I'm playing Dragon Quest, Luigi, The Outer Worlds on PS4. I'll probably be playing Death Stranding here shortly. And then Star Wars is right around the corner.
Right.
So it's like all these games. But I think out of all of them, I'm the most excited to play through Luigi's Mansion. I keep finding myself like coming home at night and being like, I've got an hour and a half to 2 hours to play a game. I want to play Luigi.
Yeah, so. I feel like it's a satisfying thing to sit down with for 30, 45, 60 minutes and chip away at it.
I like just being able to go through one floor at a time and be like, great, I did a whole floor.
Yep.
Like, let's get out of here. And I'm not a completionist in anything. Like, you and I were talking about, like, I never got all the moons in Odyssey.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Just a crazy thing to do. I do find myself...
I did, so did Brian,
yeah. I do find myself, like, really trying to figure out how to get all those little crystals and all the little jewels and stuff that's hidden around. Like, it's really good
at making them feel achievable, even if some are definitely more difficult to find.
Well, especially when you find the ones that are, like, surprises, like little secret ones where you're like, oh, that's great. Like, I was just goofing around and I found, you know, like, oh, it's really fun. Really great game. I'm excited for you to give it a shot.
Yeah.
Because you're not a Luigi's Mansion guy, right?
No. Nope.
Historically?
I read this guide for the second one and that really soured my, palette for it. But I also never played the first one because IGN reviewed it back in the day and they're like, this is lame, you should skip it.
I thought they gave it a 7.
Yeah, but, like, the review was, like, about how dull it was. And remember, those when I was having to buy games for $60 and I was, like, a kid, there's no way I'd play that game if I had a 7. Like, I mean,
you can beat the first game in, like, 4 hours.
Yeah. I remember them saying it was short, too, so I was, like, really worried about that game. But yeah,
no, it wasn't.
Sam,
definitely just got this. I'm excited to play.
You've been playing anything else on the Switch?
Yeah, so I'm playing on Switch right now Disney Classic Collection, Aladdin and Lion King.
Yep.
Should I get that?
And,
$30 was like...
You have a pretty cool archive of games, and this is like itself a cool archive of games.
Yeah.
But I think both Aladdins are really fun, and then Lion King is very frustrating at the start, and then it's cool. But they're beautiful, like beautiful games. All of them have their like moments where they're, you know, for their time, the best looking game ever. I think Aladdin for Genesis, there's nothing that looks better from that year. It's incredible. And then Lion King has its moments too. So, but what I really like about that collection is that it's how emulation collections should come together. It has like video after video after video of the original development team interviewed now about the games. Like just tons of journalism done on this. It has art from all of the game design stuff. Like a lot of collections have that. It just has art from the Disney movie designs too. From the Disney archives, which is amazing.
That's awesome,
like,
that's super cool.
And then it has a couple features, which I'm just so impressed by, including the ability to rewind anytime whether you're playing a game, right? You just rewind in emulation. That's a really cool one that a lot of people are doing now. Here's one that other people aren't doing. There's just a perfect playthrough in emulation that you can just watch and then hop in and just take over the controls.
Yep.
What?
So like mid-frame.
Yeah. They've done that in other collections as well.
The second level in Lion King or the whatever. It's the hippo level. It's terrible. If you can't get through that on your own.
Oh, can't wait to be king?
Yeah.
That makes me want to hold middle fingers up just right now thinking about it.
First of all, you can watch somebody do it on YouTube if you want to. But in this case, you can watch to the point where you just want to stop and then you just take over and you just play from there. I think it's such a cool feature.
That's so smart.
Like, if you're going to play with old games, NES Remix is one way to do it. I love doing that. Make your game a remix. And this is another great way. There's also actually a remix in this too. There's a game called Aladdin.
Director's cut?
Yeah, a final cut, I think it's called. And it's basically a director's cut that they are calling, they gave us a quote, this was original reporting for us, that it was a day one patch that they couldn't have done in 1993. So like basically crazy. They fixed a bunch of balance issues and then they added some new secret areas and you can just play this Genesis version of Aladdin in a new way. So anyway, great way to emulate, and you should support the company Digital Eclipse that did that. They also did the Mega Man Legacy Collection 1 and the SNK Collection. And even in that, they don't say what SNK
is. Where the heck is Disney Afternoon on Switch?
I don't know what happened to that. They took...
Collection never came to Switch, right?
No.
No.
That seems very odd.
It does seem weird.
That's easy money.
Yeah.
So whoever's in charge of that, go make some easy money.
It was the same company, Digital Eclipse.
Yeah, it's still Digital Eclipse, yeah.
But then Capcom took over Mega Man Collection 2, and then they're doing like their own internal stuff now. It doesn't have all the bells and whistles. It doesn't have all that emulation stuff, so...
It's weird. Yeah. Brian, we talked a little bit about Luigi, but what else have you been playing?
I was playing Super Lucky's Tale, which I was surprised to find out that we didn't really like.
Yeah.
When it came to other platforms, but this is the sort of like director's cut version.
Okay.
So maybe it has improvements.
Is it the Oculus game? It just is, but from like a...
Yes, but on Switch, it's just a like...
Like a top-down.
Fun,
like,
competent 3D platformer.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sort of alternates between Mario 64 style 3D platforming and then some 2D stuff, which I'm not as crazy about.
I beat that game. I love it.
Yeah, it's really chill. It's like it's honestly one of my favorite 3D platformers on Switch. I was kind of surprised to see our old reviews for it giving it a 5 out of 10.
To this day, it's the most impressive VR game I've ever played.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, because when you play it in VR, and it'd be cool for you to check it out now, it's like the game is a really my type of 3D platformer, so like I know I'm going to like it better than other people. But what it did is it gave me a sense of what VR can do for that when it's not first person. And what it did for this is it made it seem like Lucky was tiny on like a little diorama in front of me, and everything was like a Disneyland miniature built out.
Yeah. Moss does a similar thing where it feels like this. You're in this gigantic environment and controlling this little character.
Wayward Skies was a game that launched with PSVR. Developers went on to make Dino Frontier, I believe.
I think so, yeah.
And that's also Ico, who went on to make...
Falcon Age.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I actually really love stuff like that. I think most people associate VR with first person. But either way, on Switch, I think this is like... I played this in Hat and Time back to back and loved this one so much more.
Huh.
If you're like itching for another 3D platformer, this is out there. It's also one of those like weird Microsoft games that are now on Switch.
So weird.
Like that keeps happening is really cool.
I prefer it to Ukulele, for example. Like
I do too, honestly. Huh. Yeah, I totally do. And the other game I was playing was Resident Evil 5, which is a game I really, really disliked when it first launched because it was absolutely all the worst parts of Resident Evil 4.
Game is built for like a co-op experience.
And so I'm playing it again on Switch and revisiting it and trying to give it a second chance. And I think I like it a little more. In handheld form, it's something that I can kind of play in small doses. And also, it looks really good.
Yeah.
It's like when you're playing it on Switch Lite, you're not really realizing that you're playing a game from like two generations ago.
Sure.
But
when that game came out, it was the best looking game on the planet.
Yeah, for sure.
And in all of its previewing and everything, I was like, are games ever going to look better than this?
Mm-hmm.
Such good lighting and really cool monsters and stuff. So like, I really like can see how, you know, squishing that down, it's with old technology is still going to look really good, right? It's like they don't need to amp it up or anything. So that game also has a really cool collectible set in it that I really liked getting. If you go for that, it's like basically the medals in Resident Evil 4.
Right.
Yes.
They have that like throughout the game, and they're like super clever and fun to get.
That's cool.
Interesting.
I love Resident Evil 5. I'll keep an eye on that. I've just gone up and up and up in my taste. And I just played through Resident Evil 4 on Switch, you know, when that was out.
Yeah, I did that too.
What a great game to revisit. And so I'm so all in on 5.
I think that was the thing. I was like itching for more of that. And I was like, let me give this thing a chance. And I'm glad I did.
Neat. And then you're also playing Cat Quest 2?
Yeah, which Tom and I talked about a little bit. I just want to give a quick shout out to that game. That is
our little bow tie boy.
Yeah, very, very casual RPG. Casual, but it's really fun. It's incredibly straightforward. It's basically like this kind of 2.5D open world map, and you can just travel around and go into dungeons and beat things up, level up. It's got like a little bit of very Diablo light style gameplay, and it's fully multiplayer too, so check that out if you're looking for something fun and casual and Cat co-op.
I should also mention we talked a lot about Return of the Oberdin last week on the show, and I just barely started that, and I'm looking forward to digging into it on the Switch. So, okay, and that brings us to Super Mega Question Block. Yeah, we got a bunch of questions from
Game
Twitter
of the Year edition.
And a bunch of questions from the Nintendo Voice Chat podcast forums on Facebook. So without further ado, we're going to jump right in from the podcast forums. A question from our friend Soham Paul, and he asks, if you could revive one dead or dormant Nintendo franchise, what would it be? And which studio do you think should give it a shot for its next outing? I'm going to go ahead and just say right off the top, Advance Wars.
Yeah.
And I would like to give it to the studio behind Wargroove, whose name I'm forgetting because they basically made an Advance Wars game. But yeah, I loved Advance Wars. Wargroove didn't exactly click for me, but it was very close.
Yeah.
So I think that they could do justice to it.
Sam, you mentioned NES Remix earlier.
Yeah.
That's the one.
I was thinking about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Doing an SNES or Game Boy or N64 remix developed by the same studio that worked on the original. Hyper-focused, WarioWare style, tight, weird versions of classic games.
And they never did SNES, and there's, of course, that whole library. And then, like, it would be so funny to see the broken, modified versions of Nintendo 64 games.
Oh, God, yeah.
64 Remix would just be, like, a hoot.
Well, yeah. It would be like you'd be playing Mario 64, and they'd be like, throw the penguin into the abyss. And be like, all right.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll take it.
Yeah. That would be great. I feel like those games sold really well, and then they just went away.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what happened there.
There was no more NES games to remix. I mean, they really did have like that kind of swath of games that is in the Nintendo Online now, and
yep.
It's like Nintendo doesn't go very far to mess with games that weren't original, really popular owned games. By
it's
Nintendo.
True.
Yeah.
So that's your pick as well?
No, I had WarioWare as mine.
Uh-huh. Ooh.
And I actually want WarioWare to be made by anybody that made the last couple WarioWares. Although I did like the gold package. I mean, that was fun. Like all those.
The collection on 3DS.
Yeah,
yeah, that was great.
It was cool to play those old games again. But I'd like that game has to be like the 1-2 Switch developers. Like give them that.
Yeah.
Like give them that
yeah.
and the Switch controllers and have like people make 300 new games and just have them all party game focused.
If anyone could do HD Rumble well, it would be for that yep. game.
Sure.
Absolutely.
I think that's like it's trite, but that's a franchise that really needs to go back to its roots.
Mm-hmm.
Like they need to revisit what made the original so phenomenal. And it's not just the mini games, it's also all the weird toys and stuff that you unlock.
Love that stuff.
Like the unlockables in those games are excellent. Mm-hmm. And I think that over time they got almost too hinged on one gameplay mechanic and weren't really fleshed out in terms of variety or substance. So yeah, go back to the originals and just make a bunch of fun.
And
yeah,
the shell
games.
Of the party games wasn't really ever good on. Well, the GameCube one had a really good one, but like four players should be able to play basically a Mario Party with WarioWare style mini games and a more interesting game board. And that's my perfect party game.
Totally, totally.
Pikmin.
Yeah.
Yes.
I need Pikmin back. So
I mean,
badly.
Supposedly we're gonna get Pikmin 4 sooner or later.
Apparently it's been done for like 6 years, according to Miyamoto.
Did you play the 2D 3DS one?
I did, and if that's the end of Pikmin, I will be so sad. It's not terrible, it's just,
it's just
forgettable,
surprising.
And it's so easy. It's such a like easy game to get through and to do very well in, whereas like there is a really fun challenge to well-done Pikmin of the original trilogy. Like I think Pikmin 1 is one of the games I've spent the most time replaying to see how quickly I could get through it and beat it in as few like day count as possible.
Me too. I did that with the original like crazy. It's really weird that we got Pikmin 3DS and Metroid Prime Federation Force within like the same year, which is to me like two swing and a misses in terms of taking this.
And
like,
that Pikmin 3DS game was bad.
It was just like they were trying to make games for babies, for children, which is fine. But Nintendo's best games are the ones that scale to all ages.
Right.
And I think the original Pikmin is like, you can play that game as a kid and be challenged. And you can play as an adult and like put 10 hours into it every single day and try to do what Jonathan and I were doing, was finish it in the least amount of days possible. And there's like a substantial challenge there. And I just feel like they tried with both of those franchises and it was just like, nope.
Not so much. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, bring those things back.
Right. Okay, moving on. From Daniel Paul Peoples, he asks, what are your favorite games that are considered bad? Like How We Love B-Horror Movies, for example. Sam?
Oh, dude, I collect Nintendo games, like NES games, and I collect them on three criteria. Quality, rarity, and irony. And that third thing, I love bad games. And those are called Kuso games in Japan, which means poop games. But they're games that are like, there's poop a term games. For this, and Spelunker is the original that people really, if you look up the term, that's like the example, and that's like, it's just this terrible clunky platformer that Spelunky is loosely based on, which is not a clunky platformer by any means. It's great. But Spelunker, that's a good example of an NES game. But if I had to name some, I really like California Games. The game is so funny. Put it on. It's impossible to figure out how to play. TNC Surf Design is like this too for the Surf. And it's so funny to watch. You can just mess with every single sport in that, and it's hilarious because everybody face plants and gets hurt really bad. And all they're doing is playing hacky sack, or as they call it in that game, competitive footbag. I also recommend
competitive footbag.
Oh, no.
I also recommend Monster Party, which is a really bad game about fighting giant monsters, but it's so playable and fun. And then some of the monsters are like wishing wells and cows that squirt milk at you and stuff. And Zombie Nation, that's another one. There's just games that are like, they're playable and they're objectively bad. That's just a joke that I said that. But they're, they would be rated poorly by a reviewer probably, but they're really fun and funny to watch, especially with some beers.
Sure. Jonathan, Brian?
I mean, depending on who you talk to in this office, Kingdom Hearts.
Sure.
But
Jonathan.
Depending on who you talk to.
How dare you?
I love them, but people hate them here.
That's not a bad game.
No, I don't think so. But
no, they're terrible.
Yeah, they're terrible. I'm kidding. No, I know.
I don't play them.
Nothing really recently. I think a game, because I looked it up from the Sega Genesis, Sonic 3D Blast.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like that isometric.
Oh, God, that one's so difficult to get
it's so nauseating. Tough, and I think it was pretty horribly rated when it came out. Like, I looked at reviews recently, but I have super fun memories because I inherited my Genesis from my mom, and she only had like 3 or 4 games, and you couldn't really buy a lot of Genesis games commonly when I was playing it, so we would just play Sonic 3D Blast a lot because that was one of the few games we had. So I played that game a ton and really had a lot of fun because we would just swap controllers, but I don't think it was a good game.
It also looked really good. That was like their answer to Donkey Kong Country, where it was like, we can make pre-rendered sprites and like make it look all 3D and cool. But
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was just hard to play.
Sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of blur to that game. Yeah.
It was like, the Sonic bonus levels are like always look really good and they're hard to play. The levels between levels, like 2 when you're in the house.
They just made a whole game out of them, right?
Yeah,
basically. Yeah.
It's bizarre.
Actually, that one is a lot like the Sonic 3 one, where we're just going over like a planet surface and jumping.
Oh, yeah.
I liked Kirby's Air Ride. I understand it's like absolute.
The one button game?
Yeah, it's completely casual. You can beat that game by not even touching the controller. You just put the controller down. But the window dressing of that game was like totally Sakurai. Uh-huh. Like, it was like full of weird little meta challengey Smash Brothers type things, like, where you have to use the hammer to open up tiles and stuff like that.
Sure.
And tons of stuff like that. The other one I liked was Piano 3, which was Capcom exclusive.
Yeah.
One of the big
GameCube Capcom game. It was part of the Capcom 5, which then ended up becoming,
I think it was a Capcom 3. Yeah.
And then only Piano 3 was
the only exclusive anymore.
Exclusive.
Right?
Yeah.
Did Billy Hatcher move?
Billy Hatcher was Sega.
Oh, that was Sega.
Yeah.
The other two games in the Capcom 5. Oh,
well,
maybe
it was
I'm
Killer
right.
7.
It was 4. Yeah.
Resident Evil 4.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Piano 3.
Beautiful Joe.
And Beautiful Joe.
Piano 3. And then Dark Phoenix, which was the bootleg, like, open world 3D Kid Icarus style game.
Okay.
Got straight up canceled.
Canceled. Okay. Yeah. So it just didn't come out.
So Piano 3 was the only one that I believe was.
What stayed on the. Eventually Beautiful Joe made it to the PlayStation.
And same with Killer 7 and RE4.
Yeah, for sure.
And Piano 3 was basically a third person shmup, but you played as a dancing woman.
Yeah. A dancing robot woman.
A dancing robot woman. Yeah. And you went through these, like, very sort of like. Kind of stark minimalist hallways and fought robots, and that was it. And people were like, "This game sucks."
It's rhythm
I was like,
too. Right?
I kinda like it.
Kind of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It got pretty zen like when you got into the mix of it. It was a good time.
Yeah.
I was gonna never play that game again.
I was gonna choose Sonic Adventure, which was a game that when it came out, people absolutely. I know people like loved that game when it came out, and then the discourse like very quickly shifted to over time shifted to the idea that like, oh no, that game is bad and the camera is bad and the characters are bad.
I think a lot of Sonic fans still think that game is good.
But like, I still love that game. And when I started at IGN, I'd probably been here about a year when I hooked up a Dreamcast and showed Sam Sonic Adventure because he had never played it.
Yeah.
And it was really fun. Like, I still really like that game. And it came to GameCube and it was a better version on the GameCube.
It is like a big, janky Mario 64. It's not like super drop in quality for Mario 64. It's just like, for some reason,
it's less open. It's less open than Mario 64. The levels, though, like there are open areas.
You have to be in like a
city.
Castle, it doesn't really make sense.
It's like a city, and it's like all confusing. Yeah, that game is not very good.
And the dialogue is just like Chow's yelling at you, like, "Hey, Sonic, thanks for coming to help."
Yeah,
don't you start that game running down the hill?
That's Adventure 2 Battle.
That's Adventure 2.
Which is the one, is Adventure the one where you start and there's a whale?
Yes.
Okay, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
Okay, those are good picks.
A lot of running towards the camera in those games.
Those are good bad picks. Nathan Wallace asks, what's everyone's favorite type of dog?
The ghost dog in Luigi's Mansion.
Good. I said Shiba Inu.
That's a good one.
Oh, those are cute.
They look like little Pokemon.
And you actually really like the dog.
I really like Chow Chows.
Oh. Mm.
Is that purple tongue?
I like, and they black look like Chow Chows.
Messed up lions.
Yeah. Crazy looking.
Yeah, those are terrifying animals. Yeah. They look like the beasts that go wild in Willow.
They all have black tongues?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I didn't know.
Purple, actually, yeah. Like giraffes.
Like weird, yeah.
Huh.
All of that could have been a lie, and I wouldn't know. my dog is my favorite type of dog.
Mm-hmm. What kind of dog is that?
Large terrier?
No, he's a half... Oh, God, what is it?
Yeah.
I can't even remember. He's like three things.
Isn't there like a Cocker Spaniel coloring?
He's got a little bit of Cocker Spaniel in him, and then something that is Saint something.
Oh,
Bernard?
No.
Saint Cocker Spaniel?
Saint Cocker Spaniel.
Perfect.
No, I forget what the mix he is, but he basically now looks like a fox Pokemon.
Very cute.
Because of it, and it's very cute.
Very nice.
I like mutts. I think dog breeds have some issues, and I worry about them. But I also like adopting, and if I were to adopt a dog, I would like herd dogs. I think they're very smart.
Mm-hmm. They are very smart. They bite you back at your knees.
Yeah, my family.
Rude.
My mom has horses, and she has working herd dogs, and they're like little humans, and I've never seen anything like it. She can say, "Go get this horse by name," and then the dogs, which are all Aussie shepherds, will go out and like get that horse separate from the herd and bring it in a gate, and it's like. It's like watching an alien.
That's so weird.
It's the most amazing thing I've ever seen.
That's awesome. That's you really should cool. Bring one of those horses to work.
I should do that.
But with
and really a bunch nice. Of those dogs, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
bring your horse to work day.
Tony4D over on Twitter asks, Luigi's Mansion is a great game, but the controls stink. Changed my mind. And I wanted to talk to you about
this
specifically.
Yes, you could do this for us.
Because Brian said he was having a really hard time with Luigi's Mansion and he wasn't really getting into it. And I told him that one of the things that helped me was that you can switch the controls from... turn to don't turn. You can toggle that off and on so that Luigi, when he turns on his flashlight or his vacuum, the game automatically makes you static, and then you control the vacuum or the flashlight with the right stick, which is like really weird. But if you turn on, Luigi will turn with the left stick, and then you can use the right stick to go up, down, left, right, which makes aiming a lot more precise and like changes the way you play
it's
that game.
It's so much more natural when you like when you pull on like a chandelier and a bunch of dollar bills fly out in the air.
You can just go straight up.
Yeah, and you're just like that.
Yep.
You can also throw on the motion controls, which make very slight like deviations in tilting and make it a world of difference.
Yeah,
I think
they work
that
really
stuff
well
on for Zelda. You might like it here.
The motion controls work really well on the Pro Controller as well.
Yeah. The I was really fighting the right stick in this game, and then I talked to Zach, and I put all those settings on, and now I'm like totally in love with it.
Mm-hmm.
It was such a simple thing to change. It's honestly surprising that they shipped that at the default level.
Yeah,
like that's based on the C stick.
That's like like the Splatoon, the first Splatoon game. The default was motion controls, and you had to go in and toggle that off.
Mm-hmm.
And like Splatoon players swear by motion controls and say that it's the best way, like for precision aiming. But like I never played with those, so I thought that was really weird.
I got really used to that in Breath of the Wild, where you're like aiming. And then, like, the final aim is motion. Like, I got so used to that when I was playing Resident Evil 4 recently, I kind of was wishing there was a little bit of motion controls back.
Yeah, and then there was on Wii. I wish they ported those.
That game controls so well.
Do you know that 5...
That was like the Wii game for point and shoot.
5 on Switch does have motion controls.
Weird.
No way.
So, like, what the hell,
Strange.
Capcom?
Really?
You know how to do it. I know you know how you remember. Bring it back for 4. What's going on?
Huh.
So I would totally play that game again.
Patrick John over on the Facebook forums asks, do you think Toby Fox is being groomed by Nintendo to make an Earthbound game? I think that is maybe a bit of a stretch, but I will say Undertale is probably, as far as I can tell, I've not played a lot of Undertale, but it's probably the closest thing to an Earthbound game that we've had in a very long time. So I think there may be like a little bit of wishful thinking there, but it's an interesting idea for sure.
Dogs are groomed. People are recruited.
That's true. Yeah. Brian Christopher asks, top 5 worst cheeseburger ideas.
Hawaiian. Yeah, I mean, anybody that puts like pineapple on their cheese, just hot, sweaty pineapple on their meat. It's just disgusting. What are you doing?
I think the idea of grilling a pineapple on a barbecue grill is really good, and then I hate it.
Really?
Like, I love the grill lines. I'm like, this is so cool. Wow, what a cool idea.
Yep.
And then I'm like, oh, it's hot. And,
I like a hot
pineapple.
I've
never had grilled pineapple.
Oh, it's very good. Yeah, I don't like a fish burger. I've seen like a like a fish burger in restaurants that really strikes me as odd.
Is that even a burger?
I don't. Yeah. I think it's just like a fish sandwich on a hamburger bun. But it's like there's a weird like disconnect that happens in my brain where it's like I'm gonna bite into this thing that looks like a hamburger and then it's gonna taste like fish.
And
no, thank you.
Yeah, and that's the C.
Yeah, not good. Not into that. Mm-hmm. That's three ideas. What's another bad burger idea?
Twizzlers.
Twizzler burger?
Yeah.
What's on that?
It's two burger buns with Twizzlers in the middle. Mm. You got to eat like bread with Twizzlers. I just think like that mouthfeel would be really gross.
That'd be gross.
Yeah. I feel like I'm talking to a 6-year old right
now. Yeah. No, I was trying to think
what
of like.
What if you put Twizzlers? That's a question.
A lot of high end restaurants get silly with all the bacon jam stuff. It's got like this sweet fruit. You don't need to do all
bacon
that.
Bacon jelly?
Yeah, but it's like a jam. It's like a fruity jam that they introduce some bacon into.
I don't think savory jams or chutneys are always a good idea.
I agree.
Gross.
That's the official sound of the chutney.
The chutney. Chutney is such a gross word to me. I don't like it.
Chutney? Yeah.
Does it sound like buttney to you?
It didn't until just now. Okay.
I think all cheeseburgers are bad ideas.
What?
But I like Impossible Burgers. They're pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's a question from Brian Longenwalter. Power Stone, would you want a third iteration? Did anybody else play Power Stone or was it just me?
No, but I just talked about this a lot because it was like 20 questions on GameScoop.
Okay.
And I always heard that was like a better game than Smash Brothers from my friends that had Dreamcast at the time.
Than the original Smash Brothers?
Yeah,
probably,
like, Smash Brothers, get out of here. Like, we got Power Stone. But that made me so mad that I never played it.
It was like... It did do a lot of the things that Smash Brothers did before Smash Brothers did them. Like it was, you know, like a 4v4 brawler and like, or I guess a 4-on-4 brawler and like destructible environments. And the second one especially was like the environments would change and like you'd be fighting as like you're falling through a level. And like it did really crazy stuff. I really loved Power Stone. And I just put this question on the list because I wanted to talk about Power Stone.
If it comes back, who should make it and who made it originally?
Well, it's a Sega game originally. Yeah, I don't know if there was. I don't know if it was just Sega published or Sega developed. I can't remember. But if they were to do a third iteration, I mean, I'd like to see Capcom take it on. I think that actually Capcom might have developed Power Stone. Let me see.
Is there any Power Stone character that should be a Smash DLC character?
It was by Capcom. It was by Capcom and published by Sega.
I don't think anyone can name anyone from that game.
Yeah, that's fine. I tried.
No.
Iconic classic franchise.
Stone.
Mr. Stone. Okay, moving right along. What is your favorite holiday-themed game and or DLC from Justin Pua on the Facebook forums?
I love when it gets Christmassy in Animal Crossing.
Yeah.
Like that game is phenomenal at celebrating the turns of seasons and holidays and like making eventizing Thanksgiving and Christmas and Halloween and Easter and all that other fun stuff. I cannot wait for that game to come to Switch.
I know. Like, it's honestly, better to get it in
spring. Right around the corner.
I think the Banjo-Kazooie ice level is the best music that's ever adapted to be in like a cool wintry Christmas area. And then I like how it's loosely Christmas themed, but also winter themed. And then I love the ice key so much. But that's number two. Number one, Red Dead Redemption, Undead Nightmare. That's the best standalone, and also I think it was also DLC at the time, mod that's ever happened from an original, like from like the publisher themselves.
Was that
like,
set at Christmas?
No. I was saying he said holiday themed, and Halloween's a holiday.
Oh, that's fair.
Sure.
Okay.
I can just stick with Banjo-Kazooie if that doesn't count. But I think that was an amazing use of that open world.
Sure.
To do both Christmas and Halloween, I think the Halloween Town and Christmas Town levels in Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2 are actually really good. They're some of my favorite approximations of Disney movies in those games.
I was gonna say Halloween Town as well.
Yeah, especially when they go to Christmas Town in 2, they do a lot of really fun stuff there. But I also like the villain representation, the way they capture all the like the dynamic of those movies in the games.
Is it Mickey's Christmas Carol themed?
No, it's the Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, Nightmare Before Christmas.
Sorry, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they pull from those movies, and it works really well.
That's a film that Sam does not like.
I do not like it at all.
Yeah, he doesn't think it's good.
That's not what that's true. I've never seen it. is the issue. But it ruined the Haunted Mansion ride at Disneyland last
year. So you know that that's not a, like a year-round thing, right?
Yeah.
But it's only seasonal.
I was like, I'm going to go in the Haunted Mansion. I was like, what is all this stuff? And it was like terrible song.
Oh, because you hadn't seen the movie?
Yeah.
Because I went in the Haunted Mansion ride just a few weeks ago for like the first time in like 20 years. Right? And it was
converted for the holidays.
Yeah.
Nightmare Before Christmas themed. And I thought it was a good time.
Yeah, but because I've seen the movie, I was
I have a point of reference.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I totally see where you're coming from, though.
Yeah.
It was just BS. I'm not really coming from anywhere. I was disappointed to go on that ride, and then I had to go on it a second time with Nightmare Before Christmas fans, and I was like, this must be what it's like to be on It's a Small World to kids.
Yeah, that's
fair. Or people who really love the world.
Children.
Big world fan here.
Last question comes from Bo. I'm going to butcher this. I'm sorry. Karnahi. And he asks, game of the year. He says it like this. Game of the year is just around the corner. I know he does. What are your top five Switch games for 2019?
Oh, man. I can't see that off my head.
Yeah?
Yeah. Luigi's Mansion is definitely up there for me.
Yeah. Thanks. I think...
Link's Awakening.
Thinking about the games that I've spent the most time with on Switch this year, Luigi's up there for sure. Fire Emblem is by far and away like my number one.
I need to play more.
Fire Emblem might be my overall game of the year. That game is amazing, and it kind of came out of left field for me because I was like not interested in playing it. But yeah, and then I did, and it was great. I spent a lot of time with Final Fantasy XII this year, the port. It was really a really awesome port of a really amazing game. And now I'm like deep into Dragon Quest XI, same deal. Like, I know I've talked about it to death on this show, but Dragon Quest XI is like the definitive version of that game. So that's really cool.
I really like Untitled Goose Game.
Yeah.
I've not even touched that game yet. I haven't even played Untitled Goose Game.
It's a quick playthrough, but it's cool that it's like a Switch console exclusive right now, too. I think it made it a little bit extra special for me.
This game is definitely up there for me as well, and so is, in terms of smaller games, Katana Zero.
Mm-hmm.
I played that game in one sitting. On a weekend day, and it definitely feels like part one of a game.
Okay,
like when it ends, you're like, okay, now I'm ready for the story to really start going. And there's some really interesting story character stuff in there. But it is such a like if there's a game this year that was like sense of style for me,
sure,
it all comes together the way the game looks, the way the soundtrack comes in, and the way your character kind of interacts with the world. I think all come together for a really fun like 6-7 hour sort of experience.
That's cool.
Yeah,
I also really love Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3.
Oh, yeah.
I thought Ultimate Alliance 3 was super fun and like really great. Yeah. That was a good one. What else came out this year?
Tetris 99 was this year?
I
think that was right under the wire last year.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Might have been.
I keep revisiting that game. Every time they do an event, I play that game again.
Yeah, no, it's so much fun. Small shout out to, it's definitely not in my top five, but I actually had a lot of fun. We have to finish it, but Yoshi's Crafted World.
Again, yeah, Yoshi's Crafted World is great.
Almost everything this year from Nintendo is a game I've played in co-op with my girlfriend, and they've been really fun experiences for that because they're usually relatively lower stress games that we can have a really fun time together. And if it's just playing a couple levels or like hunting for collectibles, they both satisfy those.
Yeah, I think the last couple Yoshi games bottomed out, and this is on the upswing for sure.
Yeah.
Like, I really enjoyed it a lot more in the last couple.
Yeah.
My Friend Pedro was another one this year that was really cool. Yeah. Did you play much of that,
My Friend
Pedro?
It didn't really grab me.
I really
liked
that a lot. That was a really
good
one.
People really like SteamWorld, and I think our staff will like it a lot, but it wasn't for me.
I really like the story mode, single player stuff in Mario Maker.
Yeah.
I kind of dropped that game pretty hard.
I completely forgot about Mario Maker.
Yeah, crazy. That was just a few months ago.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't continue to support that game.
That's not true. I mean, I feel like there's like the maybe Nintendo hasn't, but
Nintendo
like there's
has.
So many like
no, the audience has. That's a,
I
that's
feel like
a
that's
given.
A game that they can get away with not like supporting every other month or something because there's so much content just being created.
I don't
for
know,
it,
man. I think that game really needed a shot in the arm after 3 months of being out there. Like an extra sort of like tile set or something like that could have gone a long way.
Hmm.
The fact that most of us forgot it even came out this year
isn't there a missing tile set that's not yet completed or
there's space for
another set, right?
Yeah. Hypothetically there's room on the menu for more stuff, but they just haven't introduced anything.
Man, I completely forgot about Mario Maker.
Also,
I blasted
it was
through
thing
that
you,
campaign.
You missed on the Wii U. New Super Mario Brothers U Deluxe came out in
January
of this year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And is a really fun package.
It's an incredible Mario game.
Super Luigi U expansion in it.
Yep. I like Cadence of Hyrule a lot. I know that was is controversial in the office, but I end up loving it. And then I just like how it looks so much. And then is Outer Worlds going to be out before the end of the year?
Don't know.
Don't think so.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Because that would sweep, I think, because people love that game.
I mean,
I hope that the Switch version is great.
That's the closest thing to Fire Emblem for me for Game of the Year right now. That game is amazing.
Sure, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And then Bloodstained, as we mentioned earlier, if this is like totally fixed it and everything, like that game is absolutely playable and lovely and fun.
Yep.
Top five for me, for sure.
Right on. Well, that is about all the time we have for the show this week. We got to wrap up, got to go back to work and do our jobs. But guys, thank you so much for joining me this week.
Yay.
It was a pleasure talking about Nintendo with you. This is it for us this week. I wanted to thank Logan, our NVC assistant. He really helped me out a lot this week. He's a super cool dude, and he jumped in here and helped format the show and stuff when Casey couldn't be around, which is great. Remember, you can contact us every week at nvc@ign.com, and our episodes drop Thursdays at 3 p.m. on ign.com/NVC. And youtube.com/NintendoVoiceChat. That's it for us. And next week we'll be back with Casey to talk about a top secret game. And until then, this is the only place where you can
get the thing.
Get it.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.